In the 1930s, famed pilot Amelia Earhart captured the imagination of the American people. Her determined spirit and outspoken personality helped her become one of the world's best-known flyers. In 1937, Earhart set out on her most ambitious adventure yet, a trip around the world at the equator. But after flying over 22,000 miles, the plane she was flying lost radio contact and was never seen again. The mystery of her disappearance has fascinated generations of people, from academics to armchair sleuths. Michigan State Representative Larry Inman is one of those Earhart sleuths, but he's not doing his research from an armchair. Mr. Inman just got back from a trip to the South Pacific where he helped conduct a search for Earhart's lost plane. He joins us now to talk about his trip. Welcome to our program.
Well, good morning, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to join you here today and talk about my passion for Amelia Earhart.
We're eager to hear about it, and you realize this makes you the most interesting man in the Michigan legislature.
Some may argue about that, but certainly I'm quite different than a lot of folks that run for elected office.
We'll share a Dos Equis after this interview. How's that? The trip was organized by a group called the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery. How was it you ended up being able to participate in this?
Well, I ended up meeting Grit Gillespie, who was the executive director for what they call Tiger. Back in June of 2012, he had a little conference in Washington, D.C. on what they have been able to accomplish in terms of data and circumstantial evidence on the island. And so I met him, talked with him, and basically, you know, really the difference between Rick and I was he got paid for what he did, and I basically did it, you know, as a kind of a volunteer, collector, researcher, historian. So we shared a lot of notes, a lot of things he didn't have that I had, and we became very close personal friends. And we have been working together. I've done a lot of research for the group since June of 2012, and I got invited on this trip to participate in this expedition on the island of Nicomoraro. One of the main reasons I've got invited was I, to the best of our knowledge, own the original engineering drawings that Lockheed used to build Amelia Earhart's plane. It was a 1937 Lockheed Electra 10E special. And I just happened to come across these microfilm drawings, which I just got digitized, so it's on a thumb drive, so we can actually take it out into the Pacific Ocean. And the main reason that I wanted to participate in this expedition was if we did find plane parts on the side of the reef of the island where we think she landed possibly, then we can compare those plane parts to the engineering drawings and either positively or not positively identify those parts coming from her plane.
How interesting. And you were specifically went to the island of Nicomoraro?
That is correct.
Is that how that's said? This was formerly known as Gardner Island. This is where the best thinking is. Is there consensus that this is the area where the Earhart plane went down?
We believe that there's enough circumstantial evidence with radio signals and people that thought they heard Amelia Earhart when she could not find Holland Island, when she was assumed to be out of fuel, that she was radioing for 3 days and three nights, and we determined the plane had to be on land. The engines had to be running to charge the batteries in order for the transmitter to work on the plane. And we believe that there's a great possibility that she landed on the island of Gardner Island, now called Nicomoraro, in the Phoenix group, and that she called for help for 3 days, and the Navy got with those signals and flew over a week later, didn't find her or the plane. They flew about 400 or 500 feet above the island and moved on to the other islands in the Phoenix Islands. So, you know, we've been fairly consistent in terms of, you know, every several years there's an expedition since 1985 by Tiger to continue to build evidence that there was a possibility Amelia Earhart did land on that island and became a castaway. There are other theories. There's one theory that she just ran out of fuel. Looking for Holland Island is somewhere in the vicinity of Holland Island. There's been expeditions that have proven that there's nothing on the bottom of that ocean within 250 square miles. And then there's the theory that she flew north and ended up being captured by the Japanese as they were building runways and to attack Pearl Harbor. And she was not seen supposedly as, you know, someone that got lost. And and they felt that she may have been a spy. So that's the theory on that part.
Is there a consensus, though, that she land that she came down on land as opposed to crashing in the ocean?
If you believe that the radio signals came 3 days after her disappearance on July 2nd, 1937 were Earhart's, then she had to have landed on land in order for the transmitter to get charged up on the right side of the engine. Had to be running in order to power up the batteries to power the transmitter so it can be heard. So that is the basis of, we believe she landed somewhere in the South Pacific, somewhere within close proximity of Holland Island to do those broadcastings.
We're talking to State Representative Larry Inman about his recent trip to the South Pacific to search for the lost plane of Amelia Earhart. Well, enough about the background. Talk to us about what, if anything, that you found.
Well, we're in the evaluation process right now. There were two teams. I was on the ground team looking at various sites where they had found bones at a campsite back in 1938 that the people from Fiji took and examined and determined it was from a European woman descent of about 5'8". And that leads us to a really strong impression that, you know, whoever was on that island in 1937 was a female, was European descent, was 5'8". That fits Earhart very closely. So we went to various sites where we had found various evidence of a makeup, woman's makeup kit, those kinds of things from the 1930s that just don't make sense to have it on an island way out in the South Pacific.
Well, do you think you advanced the what we know then?
Well, the biggest thing, we didn't find anything conclusive on land other than some additional items that look like they came from a female, makeup equipment and freckle cream jars that she was used to know, those kinds of things. But the biggest thing we went back to look for is the team that did the review off the reef of the island going down 200 feet with metal detectors to see if the plane, if it had been washed up down the reef, whether they had broke up. And we had a team of divers down there with metal detectors. They couldn't find any metal. The plane was made of aluminum, so it wouldn't rust, but there would be a lot of coral around it. So, and then we have the remote vehicles with camera equipment that could go down as low as 600 feet. And we are now evaluating those images. It will probably take 30 to 60 days to see if we can get something that looks like a plane or a part of a plane that might be covered with coral, and that would lead to the next expedition.
You didn't just hop on a plane to the South Pacific on a whim. You've been researching Amelia Earhart's life and disappearance for over 20 years now. What first attracted you to her life and her story?
You know, it was kind of two-folded. One is that, you know, the mystery of whatever happened to Amelia Earhart, the most popular and influential woman of the times in the 1928s to 1937, how can she just disappear? And, you know, with the whole United States Navy and Coast Guard out looking for her from July 2nd to July 18th and just disappearing. There's this intrigue about whatever happened to Amelia Earhart and why she never landed on Holland Island to get refueled and move her way to Honolulu and to Oakland. That was part of it. And the other one is the woman, the person that had courage and during that time, you know, there weren't a lot of careers for women. There were not a lot of pilots back then. And she had worked from six jobs to get her pilot's license and had a lot of courage that a lot of people today would not do, that to get in a plane, a single engine plane, and fly solo across the Atlantic and Pacific today would be a challenge for a lot of pilots. And she did that successfully. And so, you know, the intrigue of Amelia Earhart and what she accomplished back then, the doors that she opened up for women and careers, and the intrigue of whatever happened to this woman that fascinated us back in the early 20s and early 30s. And the search continues. A lot of schools have Amelia Earhart Day. Zonta has Amelia Earhart Day. The women from NASA now have Amelia Earhart Day. So my goal is to accumulate everything I can find on Amelia Earhart of originality and create the first ever traveling museum exhibit on the life of Amelia Earhart. So I'm working with a number of museums, having discussions with National Geographic, and I'm hoping to put it together this year.
You have, I understand, one of the largest collections of Earhart artifacts in the world, including thousands of original photographs, some of which were signed by Amelia Earhart. Do you have a favorite piece in your collection?
I do. And it was an early one that that really kind of hooked me in. I have an early photograph of Amelia Earhart, probably taken sometime after the Friendship flight in 1928, where she's sitting not in an aviation setting, but in a nice, easy chair with the most beautiful smile. And she signed, it appears as though it's signed by in black ink, so it's starting to fade. And so I've got that framed up in museum glass in a really historic style frame, and I have that as a centerpiece in my home. So, you know, every time I come home, I always say hi. Her nickname back then was Millie, so I always say, hi, Millie, we're still looking for you.
What are the odds that you were, that your plan for the traveling exhibit will take off here? How much do you know about that? Are you encouraged on that front?
Well, certainly I have the inventory to create the exhibit, and I've had a number of discussions with National Geographic. They would like to find a piece of the plane and document the science behind, you know, what happened to her. But they're still open about the discussion of working with me on a world-traveling global exhibit on Amelia Earhart, her life and her disappearance. But those discussions are continuing. Meanwhile, I have entered into some discussions with a number of museums that have interest in showcasing my exhibit. I'm working on a process right now where I'm putting together the flow of what I own and trying to time it out per year and the various segments of her life. And I have all my historical collection just completed in terms of a high-res scan, so it can be placed on a thumb drive. So I can send it to these museums around the United States. They can look at what I have and how I'm flowing it. And what I'm working right now on is some museum experts that will help me actually build the exhibit, flow it, frame it, and get the imaging and the graphics together. So it really becomes a first-class exhibit. It's something very unusual to have an exhibit on a person. Usually it's an error, you know, the dinosaurs or whatever, the mummies.
Yeah.
But I think there's enough public interest and attraction on Amelia Earhart that an exhibit like this would be very successful.
I'm inclined to agree with you. We want to thank Larry Inman, our state representative for Michigan's 104th District and an Amelia Earhart enthusiast. We've been talking about his recent trip to the South Pacific to search for the famed pilot's lost plane. Larry Inman, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.